Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this new episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. In this episode, we welcome in Dave Nelson. Dave comes to us coming from South Coast, New South Wales, Australia. Dave's been married 27 years with his beautiful Queen Mel and their two kids. Dave, like every guy, came to Heroic Husbands men's circles with a challenge in marriage, with a struggle, and he was willing finally to do the work that was necessary to experience massive breakthrough. Dave came in about 8 months ago, it was February in this year, and to say that he has created and self-led a spectacular marriage transformation and deep personal inner world transformation, it's an understatement. Dave Nelson, brother, it's an honor and a privilege to have you on the show, man. Thanks for coming
on. Mark. Really glad to be here.
Oh, Dave, I say it to you guys, you know, I do remember the application call. And you actually, just before we started recording, you said to me, I was setting just a little bit to the guys listening in, I was setting a bit of context for Dave and about, you know, make this conversational, you know. And Dave, what was your comment to the guys about the application call? What did you remember from that conversation from me?
That pretty much the whole application call was just you telling me to shut the fuck up and listen. Listen. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, and it's the core of men's work. You know, and you know this, Dave, and, you know, just building context for guys coming in, because without context, clearly that seems disrespectful. If you go to a therapist, you know, and shut the fuck up, it's like, that's disrespectful to my five-year-old. It's like, it seems quite bruising. I'm not going to give the context for that. I have my own perfect context with land. Dave, what do you understand was the context of why I set those boundaries with you in that first conversation? Why, when you look back now with what you now know, what's the context? Why do you see that as being necessary?
I see it now in that it gives me the ability to drop in and be present. That first initial call, to be honest, I was probably about as present as I had been leading up to the breakdown of my marriage. And I was trying to talk over the top of you, and I just had to have my say. And I guess I probably led life a lot like that.
Yeah, it's God, when you say that, I remember myself, Dave, for years. If my queen was on, she'd be like, oh my God. You know, it's like just thinking, this tsunami of thoughts in my head that just had to take control of my tongue every single time. Dave, I'd love to go back and hear the story again from you, and especially clearly for the guys listening in, so that they can vicariously just right off the back of your experiential know-how. But what was the context? So you came to the movement at the time of recording was February of this year. What was the context of, you know, the weeks, months, and maybe even years leading up to that? You know, there was a shit show happening, witting or unwittingly, in your side that you didn't realize to the extent of how you were leading the creation of the issues that were showing up. But when you look back, what were you doing that from today you can see with radical clarity just was not working, was never going to work? What was the unconscious levels of behaviors and language and ways of showing up that was coming through you back then?
I was probably unconscious on almost every level. Like you said in the intro, been married for nearly 27 years. We have two wonderful children who unfortunately both have disabilities, which are quite physical and intellectual. Bringing up one disabled child is hard enough. Having two in the family is downright awful. And for years, I would sort of mention to people that I could fully understand how people in our situation could break up, do break up. With the added pressure of life in general. And I just didn't see any of my actions. I just normalized to be honest, how shit our life was, or my perception of how shit our life had become. I'd been clearly told, so basically in December last year, Mel told me we were done. And look, that has come out of her mouth previously over the years, but I knew immediately that this was different. The tone, everything that went with it was different this time. And even then I didn't see it for what it was. I spent the next probably 6 weeks pointing fingers at everyone. It was like I just went into zero claim mode from my point of view. So I pointed the finger. It was Mel's fault. It was the kid's fault. It could have been the bloke's fault down the street for all my blame of everything else. I had a perception that I was a good husband. I was doing the right thing. I was well-intentioned. And look, I still believe that I was well-intentioned. My execution was absolutely woeful. With the breakdown, just wanted to blame every other thing in the world except for myself. And just prior to coming to the group, I came to a very deep realization when I was at home one weekend by myself, and I had the ability to step out and look back in at my marriage. And as soon as I stepped out and looked back in, and I'm just like, fuck, it's me. And extremely, I had every negative emotion going over that period. Like, it's very humbling, disappointing, upsetting, to actually realize yourself in that light when you never saw that. From that point, like, I hadn't even attempted to be a lone wolf. Like, I thought life was as good as it was going to get. And so I had just normalized it. And of course, once you normalize something, it's not a problem anymore. So, well, of course it's a problem, but in your eyes, once you've normalized it, it's fine. And I had done that with a lot of things in my life as well. So I had normalized the fact that, to be honest, I was obese for pretty much my entire adult life. So for 30 years, I had normalized the fact that I was fat and it wasn't a problem. I had come to that realization just prior to the marriage breakdown, and it got triggered at the same time as the marriage breakdown. And I've come through some really big challenges at an emotional level. And I actually just said to someone the other day that, to be honest, I was physically unfit, but I was also mentally unfit. But I actually didn't see that. I saw no problem with the old version of me. Mm-hmm. I see everything now. I saw nothing 9-10 months ago. And to be honest, Mel had probably checked out maybe a good 18 months, 2 years prior to actually putting it on me that we were actually properly done. So,
yeah, you say to 18, 24 months. I mean, it's like, I remember being on the Dad Edge podcast, and it was Larry Hagner who was leading that, saying that to me. It's like, on average, women are considering divorce, separation, splitting up about 2 years before they actually file for divorce, before they have that pointed conversation. So there's this massive momentum.
I was verbally and very clearly told at least half a dozen times in the 12 months prior, I'm not happy by Mel. And I interpreted that as she's not happy with our shit life as well. And the reality is, they would have been my views, my subconscious views, but I put them as her views in my mind to normalize where we were at.
Yeah. I'd love to bring light to the physical transformation. And I know it's physical, but it's all the other layers, spiritual, emotional, etc. But man, you got jogging the whole way. Because that's been such a spectacular part of your healing journey, I'd say, thus far in your healing journey, Dave. Can you let the guys in, just because I know you've shared within the Telegram group chat, within the movement, the photos of the before and after, you know, the Dave before hitting, jogging, hitting the track. And man, you now, it's like we're having so much fun. Like, you're the fucking sex god, like in the movement with how far you've come. Like, it's sensational. What weight were you back then, man? And like, what weight are you now?
So I was 110, almost 110 kilograms in November last year. And I actually got down to as low as 77.5 by about April. So I sort of lost 30 kilos in 4 months, which was sort of unrelated to the marriage breakdown as well. So there was a couple of different things went on simultaneously. So I actually got triggered with my weight about a month before the marriage breakdown saga. And I had to jump on scales to get on a helicopter in front of all my work colleagues. And like, I've always been big. And again, I normalized it. I would look around and see other big people and just accept, okay, well, that's the way we are. And all my father's side of the family, a lot of them are also big. And again, so I've accepted it for decades. That's just the family gene. And so anyway, I went to get on the helicopter, had to get on the scales, got very triggered. I knew I'd put a lot of weight on. But again, I normalized it by not getting on scales prior to that day. And if you don't get on the scales, then it doesn't exist. So I got on the scales, highly triggered at my weight because it was a lot heavier than where I actually thought it was going to be. And then about 2 weeks later, we had a group photo for work, and I got to edit the group photo for the website. And so I got to sit there and look at fat me for another couple of hours while I edited that photo. And so it was a second trigger only a couple of weeks after the first one. Then we had a family gathering in December, and I sat there and for the first time in all my life sat there and looked around and sort of said, this doesn't have to be me. I don't have to carry this gene. And then 3 days later, Mel said we were done. So what sort of really then triggered the weight journey was, much like a lot of people who end up in that position where I was at that point, I didn't eat for 3 weeks. I just had zero appetite. I was barely functioning as a human. Stripped a bit of weight off in that period. And then it was only 2 weeks later I went, well, I'm going to start exercising. So over here in Australia, middle of summer, or very much into summer, and I start exercising on top of not sleeping and not eating. So, went about putting some substance in my body through shakes and stuff like that. And I just started running. Well, look, let's be honest, it wasn't a run to start with. It was barely a brisk walk. But as time went on, I got better and better and better at it. And because Mel and I were in such a bad place at that point in time, there was a lot of free time for me. And I was actually throwing clothes on and going back out and running for the third time on any given day at 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. And, just got better at it. And like I said, dropped 30 kilos in 4 months, and I've now maintained that weight loss for another 4 months since I got down to where I wanted to be. So,
it's spectacular, but it really... I love how you're treading in all the key moments in your journey with relating with your weight and your body. But it really comes to that, what I call in the movement is heroic humility. You know, humility, we're just such a bastardized version, you know, in society. It's like, because social humiliation, we don't like the word, but it is that coming from the root of it, humus, ground. It's like the grounded truth of where you're truly at. You have to get in the scales. People are there. They're on the helicopter. And it's like, get in the scales, man. Boom, you're hit with the feedback. I know myself, one of the things that helped me in overcoming a poverty mindset was in one of the men's groups that I was in. Personally, I wasn't leading it, but it was like, okay, show us your bank balance and tell us for 10 minutes your entire story about money. I was like, fuck. Fuck, you know, it's like, I hide from this, you know, it's like, I'm the powerful guy. I'm like, I do the present stuff. I call guys to order, you know, it's like, I had that sort of competitive showing up in men's groups. It was like that youngest of three boys part of me that I had attacked to work. But when the leader that time went, okay, it's the money practice, it was a real moment for me going, I'm scared shitless to even like speak to this. And it was like, tell us what's in the account, what do you owe, savings or not. And then I was in the face of it, man. I was like, wow, okay. And yet that was the foundation under my feet. I was like, okay, you're ground zero. There's only one way is up, but there's no point pretending that you're at level six, pretending when you're not. And I feel the power in that for you. And by extension, guys listening in, I always want to make this interactive to guys, like, just from what Dave is sharing there, like, where are you really at? You know, you will know the topics that you've been avoiding. Like, listen to Dave, it's podcast here isn't all about marriage. Actually, it's profoundly about self-leadership in all terms. That's what the whole transformation journey is. So yeah, vicariously lean into Dave's inspiration, but be asking yourself in the background of your mind the key questions. Dave, so you wrestle down the dragon of relating with your body in that way, and you've done such exceptional work. Can you take me into the dragons that you had to wrestle with and slay, if you want to say, from a heroic story perspective, in how you were relating with your queen? And before answering this, I just want to make this completely safe for your queen and for all wives listening in this movement. The context here for guys listening in, I know Dave and all the guys that are in doing the work, they know it explicitly. So Dave, it's not for you, but for guys listening in the Marriage Transformation Heroes special series, I won't make any mention and I won't draw out any mention from Dave about his wife's behavior. There's 100% in the creation of any marital issues. However, we don't, within in the movement and in this conversation, there won't be one second of the time dedicated to, yeah, but what was her problems? Like, what, you know, what were her wounds? How was she complicating things? We don't hide from that fact. It is there. But Dave is in his position now in such a short period of time with such a radical transformation because he owned 100% his. So I just want to build that in because, you know, behind Dave coming here, there's his powerful queen, Mel, saying, yeah, go on, get in the show. So I always want wives impeccably safe here, that it's never on them. That's the power of this movement. So Dave, just to give a bit of context to guys listening in, we're just not going to be going to that container. It's about you and all about you. Take us into those dragons, inner world dragons that you've had to slay. What were the main specific ways that you were showing up in communication and intimacy and conversations and leadership around the house, family, that just weren't at the right level despite the good intentions?
I see it now, and I see I wasn't showing up in almost every capacity. Not showing up in, certainly in capacity with Mel. I probably hurt her over a long period of time with my neglect of specifically emotional connection and emotional appreciation. The life that we do have, where we've got a couple of disabled kids, like a lot of all females need that appreciation, that support at an emotional level from their husband. And in our situation, I should have given her more. And the reality is I gave her less. But I didn't see it at the time. And by me giving her less, her interactions with me were not great. And when her interactions to me weren't great, I took them something very, very simple. I would take as an absolute personal attack from her to me, all guns blazing, directed at me, and I would retaliate as I thought was necessary. There was certainly no physical violence. There was nothing in abuse like that. But it was always just a immediate fire back to whatever it was. And I would often, again, in my own mind, maybe intentions were correct, but so if I was told, well, you don't do that, so then I would just go and do the exact fucking polar opposite, as far away from whatever it was that was commented on, I would go and do the furthest thing from that at the other end of the scale, which pissed her off no end and certainly didn't get me anywhere. But in my mindset, it was like, okay, well, she doesn't like this, so I'll do this. And yeah, it won me no battles and probably just put me deeper and deeper into the shit. And
we do tend, well, I know myself when I look back, when we don't have grounded men to give us feedback, to call us in that shit, like when we're doing this in the silence and in privacy of our own home, we do get to be really fucking immature as men. You know, and it's like part of this movement, I know I say this within the groups, but it's like part of the biggest kickback that my queen gave me when I started doing men's work. She was very nervous that when I started first, she was nervous like I'd learn something or I'd get feedback that she was the problem, but I didn't. One of the things that then came from my queen, I want to touch base with you, Dave, did that happen to you? But my queen would then start going, she liked men's work. It was like I was getting more grounded and I was taking on feedback and suggestions. And that really pissed her off because she was like, you fucker. It's like, you know, just because this dude has like done men's work for 20 years and he has a website and you pay him, he says the same thing I've told you like 10,000 times. And that fucker says it once and you come off the call going, oh, so cool, you know, like, and naming the different guys. This dude said that to me today, you know, I'm going to be way more present. She's like, I've been telling you that. She gets really, really riled up. But in fairness, like what she was receiving from me was that level of immature, boyish. I get that. I used to do the same. That polar opposite is like, oh, you told me that's wrong. Well, I'm going to just go to the opposite side. And I know you spoke about intentions. I know, looking back, Dave, honestly, my intention was to piss her off. It was like, I was pissy. I was like, I was really fiber. I'm pissy with your mom. So I'm going to piss you off and just do the opposite and like deal with that.
And what I found once I did start to do the work, and you're exactly right. Someone else says do this or don't do this. And so you start to put some of that in place, and I created new resentments. The whole, why the fuck now? I've been telling you for a couple of years that I'm not happy, or this, we need to change, whatever it was. And now, like, why now? And the weight was also like, the weight was never brought up as part of a conversation relating to the breakthrough, but the weight certainly became a topic for conversation post-breakdown. And of course then by this stage I'm shedding kilos and I'm starting to get fitter, and so I created a second resentment at a physical level as well, because although she had never really mentioned my weight, it obviously hurt her. And again, that was just a lack of communication between both of us that we had reached. So again, I created another new resentment of, well, I've been telling you that, or you watch, because my wife is quite fit. So I've watched her get fitter as I've got fatter. And she's like, I don't understand why you never wanted to do it, but now you're doing it. Why now? And it was another set of resentments that I had to tackle through the journey. But I had to take 100% ownership for everything that I had done, and that's all I was able to work on. Mel had checked out. Mel was actively looking for other places to live and move to, and I was left with no choice but to do whatever I could to look at myself. And by the time I sort of had come to some very deep realizations about myself, which I said, as I said earlier, became quite hurtful internally to me. That's about the time that I found you. And because it was a case of I'd reached a point where I'd identified what I needed, well, what I thought I needed to do. And as it turns out, I was probably still a little bit off track. But that's what led me, because then I start searching podcasts. And I think the way that I found you was basically husband was my keyword in podcasts, because I'm like, surely something relating to husband will pop up. Next thing I'm listening to this Irish guy, and in no time I've put in for an application call and ended up in the circle not long after that. And for me, I'm glad the timing went the way that it went. I'm glad I ended up with the guys when I did, because without their support, I'm not sure how far I could have made it through that journey.
What was that application process like, in the sense of energetically, psychologically within you? Because as men, we have this lone wolfing, as you were saying, like minimizing and normalizing. I don't have an issue, and you're just going by default, same shit, different day. So you had this wake up moment. Your queen is finally real. Okay, looking to move out, looking for a different place. Like, Dave, this is over. So you're being hit with that direct, incredibly powerful feminine feedback. You meet the podcast. Was it easy for you, Dave, to make that application and come into the group? Or what was that process like for you?
For me, it was extremely easy. By the time I was broken by the time I found your podcast, and there was so much stuff. I think I've mentioned to you before, I only listened to maybe two or three episodes, and it was resonate. Every single one bit that I'd listened to just resonated with me. I couldn't even tell you what they were about at that point in time, but it was just hit me so hard. And I'm like, I've got to do this. Because for me, I never saw Mel and I separating. She will certainly tell you a different story, that as far as she's concerned, she was checked out, she was gone. I never saw it that way. I always saw that somehow we would find a way to get back together and make things work. And I guess that only really started to come to fruition once I realized the deep hurt that I had inflicted on her, and my lack of showing up, my lack of doing anything, to be honest. That's exactly where I was. And I just buried all those sort of emotions that I should have been having, the conversations we should have been having. I was happy just to bury them all, and same shit, different day, and just accepted it. That was, I normalized it.
Yeah. So with that normalizing and the burying of emotions, which I believe every single guy that has come to the circles, I know myself, I was doing the exact same, and every single guy listening in, the burying of emotions in our masculine bodies, like that's at the core of what we need to do as husbands and as men. So when you come into the Heroic Husbands Men circles, Dave, and you have this pattern of, you know, you bury the shit, bury it down, bury the emotions. What were the most challenging aspects of the culture within Heroic Husbands Men circles doing this ferociously deep masculine inner work? What were the most confronting parts of that journey initially?
I still remember the very first meeting that I sat into and sat through the whole meeting, listened to everyone else have their shares of what they've done through the week. And one part of me is like, this is good. There was still another part of me that was still so nervous. Like, I'm not even sure if this is what I was expecting, but it's good. And then it got to my turn to introduce myself to the group. And you'll remember I was extremely emotional that first night that I came into the group. And there was one guy in the group just fired straight back at me and hit me with the question, do you love it? Why now? What are you doing? Like, and it really woke me up to that this is where I needed to be, and to have people throw some stuff at me that was really going to make me think what I was doing, how I was doing it. Because to be honest, although I know a lot of people, I have a lot of acquaintances, I don't have a lot of friends. Just our life has, and again, just with the disabled children, you become solely focused on them. And to be honest, that's where my wife and I had ended up. We were just carers for two disabled children who happened to live in the same house. That's as bad as our relationship got down to. So,
and beyond that, so there's the first meeting, but we didn't stop then as a movement, as a culture, and getting in under your skin and ruffling the feathers. What were some parts of the message of the work, Dave? There's certain core messages that we repeat and we speak to again and again, and there's processes to bring it up. But what are some of the concepts and ideas that help wake you up now that, you know, in your everyday life, which are queen now, wittingly or unwittingly, and it's the most powerful thing, is when you're doing it subconsciously. But what are these concepts that you have learned that you're now taking and putting into quite clearly, like an astoundingly effective form in your relating with your queen?
For me, probably the biggest one is the clean plate metaphor. I reckon I served up every single thing with a very, very dirty plate.
Can you give, because I know clearly yourself and myself are in the know, what does that mean to you? Can you introduce guys listening in? Clearly there's going to be quite a few guys listening in that may not have heard that in the podcast yet and won't have a full understanding. In your own words, Dave, what's the clean metaphor for you? What's the before and after? Yeah, just give as much of an introduction to guys listening in your words.
So I guess for me, it was, if I had something that I wanted to deliver to Mel, and I would want her obviously to accept my sincerity with what I was attempting to do, the previous version of me, and I do sort of talk, when I tell some people a story, I certainly go into third person view, because there's a version of me that just doesn't exist anymore. And there's a new version of me. And so the old version, if he wanted to get something across, he would just literally throw the plate across the table at her, didn't care what it looked like, whether it was clean, the tone, the language behind how I would deliver that message or question or whatever. And of course, I've evoked a pretty shit response back. And then that's where I would then take offense to what was fed back to me. And we would just spiral out of control because of that. It's a very quick downward spiral when you're just literally both throwing shit at each other. And that's where we sort of ended up. I reached a point, and to be honest, like, I probably didn't reach that point until a good 2 or 3 months into the group, where I had a chance to do a lot of work internally on myself. And we were then able to start having some very deep conversations about things in our life that, to be honest, we sat there and they happened so calmly, and there was no anger towards each other. There was no, certainly no anger or aggression. We just sat there and could calmly discuss things that needed to be discussed. And that at that point, that showed a level of communication that we certainly hadn't had for a long time, if we'd even ever had that level of communication, that level of connection in communicating. And things just started to get better. But from where I turned things around, of how I started to deliver information, how I started to interact with her. And it, from that point there, things slowly start to progress a little bit more. And she becomes a little bit more open to the next conversation and the next conversation after that. And we're just day by day rebuilding our connections with each other.
Mm. And Dave, it's the dirty plate metaphor works from this foundational idea that I would speak to very, very often in the circles. You know, our body is transmitting a message. that is evoking a response. It's the core of all the work. So with your body now, you know, your body, your nervous system going into a conversation now with Mel, what are you doing now that is helping you evoke a sense of safety, a sense of connection, a sense within your queen that she'll meet you there, that she's not feeling attacked? What are you doing with your body, posture, eyes, tone of voice, etc., as specifically as you can? Because guys listening in, it's to really give them, so just actionable steps that they can become aware of experientially listening into you. What are you doing now?
Eye contact is the biggest one. So for years, I would look all around the room. Part of the not serving the information or the question or whatever up properly, I would look around, I'd look out the window, I'd look at the ceiling, I'd be looking everywhere but in her eyes as I'm attempting to try and have that conversation and communicate with her. And it took a lot of practice to sit there and look into her eyes. And to be honest, in a few months ago where things still weren't great, to sit there and see the pain looking back at me. I could still see love in her eyes. I never doubted that, but I could see the pain, the hurt, the anguish in her eyes. And that hurt me because I was again coming to realizations of my own self of what I had done to make things so bad. And it just reiterated that I still had a lot of work to do and I had to continue to change how I was acting or being present. And so one of the other big focuses is to sit with her and not sit at the opposite end of the room, not sit separate chairs. Like if we need to have a deep conversation, I'll sit as close as I can get to her and where possible sit facing as much as I can face her. So we can have that intimate contact, because for me, intimacy is as simple as being able to stare into each other's eyes. And it's certainly something that we didn't have for a long time.
Well, one of the core tantric relating practices is eye gazing. I remember doing a Mind Valley course on tantric intimate relating. It's like a good number of years ago. I was planting intentional seeds. There was that good intention part of myself, but I had yet to meet men's work to have my bullshit called out in me. So I thought I was being the hero long, long before it was anywhere near heroics. But I remember bringing that to my queen, Dave, going, oh, there's this eye gazing. It's meant to be good for sex. You know, it's like, let's sit down and eye gaze. And in fairness, she met me there. It was like, man, that was one of the most emotionally jarring things for me. I don't think I was eye gazing knowing better now. I think it was more like a Conor McGregor on the weighing scale stare that I was doing at her. And then I was blaming her for, oh, but you don't want to do any of this, you know, tantric relating. Here's me, like the poor victim of this marriage trying to save it. And like, you just don't meet me there. I had no idea of the softness that was needed in that. But I remember that it was so challenging for me. And hey, my queen ultimately wouldn't meet me there. She did a couple of practices and then we dropped it. Dave, when you started that powerful practice progressively with your queen of eye gazing, meeting her there, and then you were seeing the, you know, that level of hurt and pain and suffering that was present on her heart, in her nervous system, you know, building up over years. How was that for you inside of yourself to actually meet your queen's pain, knowing that you have caused so much of that, wittingly, unwittingly, but you have? What did that bring up inside of you as a man? And how did you manage and navigate what came up within you?
It hurt me a lot once I continued to understand the depth of hurt that I had placed on Mel. I'm not even there was so many negative emotions to what I felt, and as you know, and the guys in our group circle know, I carried a stick around and beat myself up a lot with that stick for a long period of time. Basically, over my perception of my treatment of Mel, how I had made her feel, how I had driven her to a point that I never ever thought that we would reach. It's very, very hurtful to your own soul to realize that you've damaged someone else that badly. Extremely hurtful. But I never, although I may have been wavered, I never lost sight of what I wanted. And obviously that was the reconnection. Obviously there's that old saying, you don't know what you've lost until it's gone, or had until you've lost it, whatever that saying is. And yeah, Mel was right in front of me the whole time, but she wasn't there with me at all. I went through a period where I don't know how you can be so lonely in a house full of people. And that became a driver for me. I guess to use one of the other metaphors, like we literally were magnets at similar poles who were repelling each other at that point. And whatever episode I listened to, or that might have been one of the groups, we spoke about the magnets, and that really, again, resonated with me, that particular thing. And I'm like, okay, well, I can do everything I can do. I've got no control in what Mel feels. Well, I do have control over what she feels, because if I treat her like shit, or I've hurt her, then obviously I do affect her feelings. I can't change or make Mel change her point of view, but I can change what I'm doing and take 100% ownership for everything that I had control over. And I think I've done that reasonably successfully, to a point where I believe we have got the poles have flipped, and there's certainly attraction coming back now. But to put that in perspective, I've probably treated Mel badly for a number of years, and it's only been a little under 4 months from where it's sort of certainly turned. 7th of May this year, she sent me a text message, which it's the flip day for me, where she sent me a text message, and it said that we are now so much more aware, both of us, and perhaps we might actually just be able to make this work and come out better than we ever were. And my immediate response to that was, I've never had any doubt of that. And she comes straight back with, I have. And then another message straight after, until now. And that made me so happy. And I think I shared it with the group. I screenshotted it and shared it with the group almost immediately, because of how far I had come to get back to that point there. And although we certainly were along at like end of, that was sort of beginning of May, we were still a long way from even where we are now, but it was a long way from where the depths of where we had got to.
Yeah, and there is a perfection energetically in that. I really bring it because, my queen, in recent months, Dave, she came to me and she was because of me for a number of years now being more and more safe, not perfect, but predominantly safe in all the conversations. She's been having these deep inner world reveals of her entire relationship within herself, you know, like forget about as a wife, as a woman, as a human being, as a spiritual being, as like. And she came to me with Mark, you know, it's like she almost had like a tinge of Well, I don't want to put words on it. She had a tinge of her hesitation. She literally asked me, it's like, am I safe? You know, can I share something with you? It's quite vulnerable. And it's like, yeah. She's like, I believe you committed years before me to this relationship completely. And it came to me, Dave, you know, she was feeling a hesitation in telling me. I was like, baby, that's perfect. Because in a way, that's how it has to be. The masculine whole, the masculine role, like protector, you know, how it's meant to be energetically is when a man comes into a marriage container, like commitment is just has been ripped out of his nervous system. I speak about, you know, initiations, rites of passage, guys in sub-Saharan Africa that have to go into the savannah and kill a lion with their own dagger, with their own spear, and carry it back. And only then can they have access, you know, to become a husband for a woman in the village. Because why? He has demonstrated an absolute inarguable commitment. So my humbling reflection to her is like, you know, that's how it's meant to be. You can't commit. You can't lead that absolute commitment. Otherwise, like, who's there to protect you? If you're the one, baby, that practiced all of that commitment, if you led with that commitment, I would have got even more lazy. So it's like, it's energetically how it's meant to be. In the most powerful, beautiful, energetic, balancing, call it universal energy, you know, natural order, whatever. And I know there's a lot of kickbacks and there's a lot of opinions out there, people that would fight this and different perspectives, but like, I just care about opinions that actually work in marriage. So it's like, there's a lot of people that give kickback. It's like, yeah, well, my question will be to any kickbacks, well, how's that working out in your marriage? And a lot of times the people that give the kickback, they go quiet because it's not. So I really get that, you know, you led with that and your queen can then surrender. Masculine non-surrender, feminine is surrender in. And it's only when us as men actually lead that dance and go, hey, I'm going to be safe. I'm your protector. I'm going to protect this marriage. I'm 100% all on board. Only then can a queen's nervous system go, okay, well, I can relax into all the things that weren't right in time. You've done an exceptional job on that, Dave.
And before coming to the group, I honestly wouldn't have thought you could make as big a change, or I could have made as a bigger change as I have, just working on my side. I always, I guess, believed initially first up that we had to work together to sort out through our issues. I guess what I've subsequently found out is a lot of them weren't necessarily our issues. They were my issues that I had allowed to get in between us.
Mm. And talking about your issues, you know, the elephant in the room in this conversation is, you know, guys like yourself, I know when I came to Deep Men's Work, Dave, it was like I was rescuing my marriage. You know, so it's a key reason. You know, you come to Men's Work to rescue your marriage, or the majority of guys come to Men's Work after their marriage has went in the shitter, or their relationship with a girlfriend, you know, the feminine gives the dropkick out of my life feedback. More predominantly, guys come after breakup. But when you get into Men's Work, you actually realize like what you're pointing to, it's all about me. Not in a narcissistic, self-centered, unconscious way, but it's actually those narcissistic, you know, complete self-centered patterns. You've got to look at those and go, wow, and take ownership of them and how they're not working out and never will. You mentioned there is like the level of self-criticism, that shame stick that you would beat yourself with. You've done really profound work on that. And you're relating with the habitual thoughts that come up in your mind and have been for years that would sort of just take yourself down. And just to speak mechanistically to guys listening in, you know, every guy that comes to the work with me one-on-one or in the group, they'll all go through a reflection, a journaling reflection of, oh, in moments of conflict, what's your blame, shame, and claim? ratio, which is like, give a rough estimate of what's the percentage of blame thoughts, which are against your queen or against your kids, against anything but you. Shame thoughts are thoughts against yourself, and then claim thoughts are you taking extreme ownership. Pretty much by and large, no guy. Some guys sort of, they're brilliant. They're like, oh, I'm at 20 or 30% claim. It's like, no, you're not. You wouldn't be on this call if you're at 20 or 30% claim. So blame thoughts is like,
I think I was at 3% or 4% from memory.
Yeah, you were one of the most honest guys. The blame thoughts are the more predominant. But a key thing I want to have clear, and you're probably in the clear with this for guys listening in, is the only reason we go to blame thoughts, I know myself, Dave, in conflict, when I started realizing, man, I was predominantly blame. Very arrogant. Like, your fault. Like, exceptionally shadow language, calling her every name under the sun, most of the time internally, and then it would come out. But internally, I was such a righteous, arrogant asshole. It was unfucking real. But what I realized, Dave, was, wow, the only reason there's so much blame there is like, you have so much shame, Mark. You feel so inadequate, so incomplete. You just never feel like you're enough as a man, that at the mere look of Matilda feeling unhappy, et cetera, it's like, you're actually, the deepest story is you're beating the living shit out of yourself. What has your inner process been, Dave, in embracing that part of yourself, this habitual way of blaming yourself, which is technically shaming yourself, and slowly but surely overcoming it? Because, man, from the outside, you've done astonishingly well in shifting that pattern. What has that process looked like and felt like inside of you?
So, yeah, I was probably predominantly blame when I came to the group. I mean, like, so I was predominantly blame. Very high percentage of shame, and like I said, I was less than 5%. Through the work, through the journaling work that we were doing, through exercises, I came to a realization, it must have been maybe around April, that I had very, very minimal self-love. And I was unable to forgive myself at that point, forgive the previous version of myself for what they had done. And they were probably some of my darkest moments around April. I came to the realization that I couldn't see anything positive about myself, about what I was doing. And then it was the work of that quarter's goal for me to try and achieve more self-love and some self-forgiveness. And I worked hard on that. There was a lot of journaling went into that period. There was a lot of phone calls with the guys in the group and like deep conversations with men. And I'd opened up and I was sharing stuff with guys that I've probably never shared with males like that before. And whether it was our group messaging or whether it was one-on-one calls or messages with guys, and each and every one gave me something when I really needed to focus on it, which allowed me to see that I was doing some really good stuff, and there was real profound change occurring. And it was only once I started to recognize that and accept it for what it truly was I was able to then start shifting my own mindset away from so much blame and shame, and really start to claim not both the negative but the positive of what was going on in my life at that point.
And how did that shift how you were able to show up with Mel? Because you're still, I mean, in that timeline, it's not like everything was in the clean and clear. It, like, you know, there still were a lot of super intense, gnarly conversations. But what was that work, building your muscle of self-love on the side? How is that benefiting your capacity to show up with your queen in those conversations?
It just allowed me to be more present. I'm not even sure how to describe that, but it just allowed me to become more grounded, calmer in myself. I wasn't so much on edge constantly. And obviously if I'm on edge and I sit down in front of Mel, then the whole thing's on edge. And I started to realize as I was able to, get out of my own way, realize that conversations could certainly start to be better if I was calmer. And almost back to the clean plate metaphor, that if I can deliver it on a nice clean plate, we can sit there and we can eat it, discuss it.
It's the essence of Manton in the Storm. Is that other key thing that we're talking about? You know, just...
Oh, it is. Yeah,
That masculine pole. What do those words, I see it triggers something in you, the Manton in the Storm. What have those words come to mean for you? Because you're embodying it so perfectly, but yeah, I'm curious.
I was probably almost the storm for a little while. And two storms clashing is never going to be pretty. It just came to a point where I could become a lot more grounded, being present in the conversation, being able to sit there and take criticism without, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be criticism, but taking the negative tone, the negative words, whatever they would be. And I was able to see that by not reacting the way that I used to, was having a positive, like a massive positive effect. And that, okay, we can discuss something here and sort of move forward with it a little. And there was no big profound from one week to the next. It's been a gradual work on myself, which allowed me to, be the mountain, stand there, just let her go a little bit crazy around me if she had to, and she certainly does have to at times. I'm probably hard work to be with sometimes. I find myself probably almost chasing the storm recently. And I know you speak to it at times, and we've had some conversations, some messages around where I've actively sought feedback, and I certainly would never have done that 6 months ago. I would never have chased for feedback.
Yeah. Well, it's the beautiful flip though, isn't it? You know, it becomes feedback, not criticism. When you chase it, you're voluntarily going for it. So it's like, you wouldn't voluntarily go forward to criticism, but when you chase it, it's safe for our queens. So they're like, well, he's chasing it. They don't have to make the effort. If you're chasing it, you know, I know that for myself, hence I'm calling it masculine mantras. This new language is coming through me. The masculine mantra of chase the storm or the storm chases you. I know you get this, but just bringing for guys listening in, where we speak to this in the culture very often. Chase the storm, as Dave said, is like you chase the feedback, because the feedback is going to land. But if you haven't voluntarily chased it, it's going to land and your queen is going to be pissed, because she's knowing she's having to chase your ass. She's having to hunt you down. She's having to get, and then it lands as criticism. So if you chase the storm, statistically speaking, it's going to be quite calm, because it's very trustworthy for a man to chase the storm, lead the conversation.
And I'm by no means a master at it at this point, but I'm certainly a lot better at it.
If you were talking with my queen, like in the best of weeks, Dave, she'd be giving you feedback. Well, feedback on me going, well, neither has Mark, but that's genuinely the game of it. There's a key part in getting things done, productivity book. It's a book about just how to be more productive. It's quite famous and it's the one I've tend to use. But he has a beautiful phrase in it, and it speaks to the self-mastery within that productivity system. And the guy, he says, Dave Allen, he's like, you know, the better you get, the better you better get. What he's talking about is the better you get at organizing your shit, the better you better get at this system, because you're going to get so effective, you're going to have way more needs. You're going to have way more demands on you, because why, if you get super effective at work, well, you get the promotion, you get more money, you get more people. Let's say you start getting what you want. So it's that same process that I love within this work, where as a husband, as a man, as a dad, you know, in self-leadership on all levels, well, the better you get, the better you better get, because your queen, it's like the gaming metaphor. It's boring as shit for husband and wife, king and queen, if it's like, oh, well, you know, well done, Dave, or well done, Mark. You went from level one Super Mario Bros. To level two. Oh, you mastered level two. Well, well done. You're better than you were at level one for what, like 2 decades? Or, you know, it's like, but get the fuck over yourself. You know, our queens want level 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 to infinity and beyond. And I know that part of me, Dave, I see you laughing, but I want to touch base with you. That part of self-mastery, I dig. It's like, yeah, you're doing well now, Dave, but Dave, I've been doing well for 4, 4.5 years. Like, I got some of the highest, most roasting feedback on my sexual performance, Dave, in the last couple of weeks. Matilda fucking roasted me. But her roasting was the most grounding, like how she said it. She said it like honey-like. It's like, Mark, you know, you just, amongst many different things, but it was like, Mark, I'm realizing that you've never led anything near what I need from you. It's like, you're completely off. You've planted some seeds, well done. Good intentions, yeah. Have you shifted? Yeah. But you're so far from what I am truly needing, and I'm discovering when I discover within myself my needs as a woman. Oh boy, you've a lot of work to do. And like she said, more and more stuff. Thing about it, Dave, is my feedback, my response to it was, you know, tell me more, baby. And we went and we had, I don't know, 45 minutes of like a fucking beautiful conversation where it's like, because we're at that next level and I have this paradigm of self-mastery going, hey, it's the infinite game. I want more. I don't want my wife to stagnate. I paid the price of that before. Stagnation over a prolonged period of time, I mean, that does not work good. So it was like, I'm sharing that with you, Dave, and I'm sharing it with guys coming in. You know, Heroic Husbands, it works as a system because it's that powerful. You're not going to sort your marriage in like 6 months. You'll transform it, but you're at level two. And then you and your queen, you're going to go there for a couple of weeks, a couple of months, and hey, level three and level four. And she's going to want it. And I find that's a beautiful part of the entire game. Dave, I'm curious, coming from that gaming metaphor, you know, clearly from what your queen's feedback is, you've turned the corner. You, your powerful work, taking extreme ownership of, you know, your thinking, your talking, your taking words, etc., your self-leadership. Your queen is now able to surrender in to the trustworthiness of, you'll be her mountain in the storm. What's the level you're at and where's the next level? I'm wanting to get into the juice. Like, where does that visionary part of you go, yeah, it's cool where we're at, but there's more to come?
We're in the process. So we have, our son has moved out of the house recently, and we are actively working on getting our daughter into a disabled group home as well. She's now 24. Like, she doesn't need to be with us as much as we don't need to be with her. The future for me looks like Mel and I spending a lot more quality time together. And it's something that we've already started doing. in as I've become fitter, she's always been a ton fitter than me. And there for a good few months as I started my little jogging journey, and I would get a little bit better and I'd come home all happy because I was an extra 10 seconds quicker than last time or whatever. And then she'd go out for a run and she'd come back and she's like, oh, yeah, what? Well, I just bettered it by like 15 seconds. I'm like, fuck. So it took me a long time to physically catch up with her as well. And now that I have, we found something to do that we've never done together. And I'm looking very much forward to continuing to find things to do that are foreign to us. Although we've been together for such a long time, we've been very purpose-driven in our life, our choices. I'm really looking forward to being able to do a lot of stuff that I guess a lot of people probably take for granted in their life. And it's now time for us to live our best life. And she needs to be treated like the queen that I should have done for a long, long time.
I'm going to piggyback off the potency of those words. You know, 27 years in, and your entire paradigm now, it's time for us to live our best years, our best life now. I love that because it's so contrary to when we're neck high and shit in marriage or in life. It repulses me when I hear guys, but repulses is not against the guys or judgment. It repulses me because I know I used to think like that, but it's like, oh, you meet with old college buddies and you talk about the good old times. And guys are like, oh, the good old times when you were young, the good old times when you're free and single, the good old times. Like, fuck that. It's like, hey, like whatever it is today, like my perspective, and I love your words there, Dave, I'm hearing, is like the best is yet to come. It's like, whatever age, I don't give a fuck. My best is yet to come because I don't know what the hell I'm going to be doing and like, with my queen, with my girls, with life, just, man, best is yet to come. Fuck this whole, you know, this bullshit, mediocre chain of delusion
For sure, our best is yet to come. Because we have both become so more aware. And it only took one of us to change. Yeah, it was big. It was huge.
Beautiful.
And I still do one of the other podcasts that you had there a couple of months ago talked about I think it was White Star Line, Titanic, the shipping company of the Titanic, and they had this shiny new cruise ship ready to go. But would the passenger want to get on? And I see that between Mel and I in that she's been there. She watched the Titanic go down. She watched the captain fuck that ship right over, royally. Yet here he is, popped up and go, hey, look, here's a new shiny version of a ship. Do you want to get on board? And there's still, I wouldn't say it's reluctance anymore. There was certainly reluctance early on. But I think she's happy to get on and have a look and see what the new shiny ship's got to offer her now. And for me, that's huge. I love her. I never stopped loving her. I just didn't show it very well.
What I say to guys is like, when there's such a level of profound shame, you know, as guys, that's, and I know women have the exact same thing in their own version, but in this society, we beat the shit out of ourselves as men. It's been like, it's the feminist movement was amazing because it shone a spotlight much needed on women and, you know, the inner issues and external issues they had. But it's the men's movement has been getting up to speed in shedding a light on just the profundity of shame that guys have had. But it's that level of when you get to grips with that and you can ground into your fullest power like you're doing, you start, I don't know, reclaiming your right. I love us like hearing stories like you. It's like reclaiming your right, that leadership role as a husband. I there's zero leadership roles. Nobody's going to win an argument with. You're not going to win me over to a different perspective. Dave, my entire belief, what drives me as a man personally and in this movement, the podcast, etc., is this unshakable belief that husbands were the most important leaders on the planet. And it's not, there is like a little bit of, the context could be a book in itself. It's not that we're the most important leaders and all women are not the leaders. You know, it's like we are the most important leaders because when we click into gear like that, our powerful queens have been waiting. They're in waiting. They've been doing the training, you know, on a monthly basis. I've spoke to this in the groups and I want to bring it again and again and again. Also for queens listening in, you know, it can seem, I know my queen had a bit of kickback with that, Dave, as well. It's a bit like when I came to the work, but then the kickback is now that I have, you know, led the transformation so much, she's like, her resentment is, yeah, you think you did it all. But she has reminded me, you know, I've done my part, but you had to click your ass into gear to allow me do my full part. So it's always, there's two leaders. And I just love that. This whole patriarchal, you know, it's like, oh, men down with the men and up with the women. It's like, fuck that for shit. It's like, I don't like the, you know, behind every great man is a greater woman. I'm like, there's great men and great women. When we do the dance together, it's astonishing. It's incredible. And yes, the best is yet to come because you're both, you know, cutting the chains of bondage, whatever, liberated to just be who the hell you want. And that's a beautiful game that you're living out, Dave Nelson, with your beautiful queen. Dave, coming into landing here, a ton of guys, the vast majority of guys listening in, the vast majority, like yourself, like myself for so many years, are lone wolfing. They're listening in, great intentions, and I honor the guys for listening in. However, the vast majority are on that edge of lone wolfing is that comfort zone. Quite a number would be having the idea of, God, maybe. And if they're not, you know, maybe this is the moment for them to consider it. They're on the edge of considering applying to join Heroic Husbands Men's Circles. If they're in a cafe having a cup of coffee with you and they tell you, hey, Dave, I'm just not sure. I want to live out what you're living out, Dave, but man, I don't know. I've got resistance inside of myself. What words of wisdom would you share with them, Dave?
You've just got to do it. Like, you've got no idea what is actually inside yourself until you start exploring it, and you need the right people around you to bring that out of you. I've realized stuff about myself that I never even knew, and I wouldn't have done that without sitting in this group. The fact that I'm healing my marriage out of this is obviously a massive bonus, but I've learned so much about myself in this period as well. In saying that, I certainly never want to relive it and I wouldn't wish it on anyone, but maybe I needed to be where I've been on this journey in the last few months. As much as I didn't want it, maybe I needed it, but I would tell anyone that they just need to get in the group, and the best is yet to come for that as well, because it certainly has been for me.
Man, what a beautiful way to end it. The best is yet to come. That is the message that husbands around the planet need to hear. Dave, you are a spectacular human being on every single level. Man, to say that is an honor and a privilege to have witnessed and continue to witness how you're showing up as a man, as a king, as a husband, as a communicator, as a dad, you're such a supportive man within the movement. Like you're flying the flag, the standard bearer for how to engage with this work and at an exceptionally high level, man. such an honor to witness your process and continue to do so. Thanks so much for coming on, man.
Nah, thank you so much for inviting me. Love you, Mark. Love the group.
Thanks, Dave. Love you too, man. Healy Brothers, Heroic Husbands listening in. Here is one more in a long expanding list of marriage transformation heroes. This has been Dave Nelson's turn to set down that masculine gauntlet to you. Unapologetically in this movement, I'm bringing it. The guys are bringing it. Lone wolfing does not work. Kings have king's councils. It doesn't matter who you look at that's succeeding in a big way, in a beautiful way in the world, from Olympians to sporting to athletes to CEOs. It doesn't matter. They have support, be it coaching support, therapy. They have groups, dietitians. There's always a team of trusted individuals. It's the King's Council helping them to bring out their fullest potential. Lone wolfing doesn't work. It's not a sign of power. You're hiding from your fullest power ultimately. And hey man, the best time to transform your marriage is 20 years ago. The second best time is today. Let today be your day. The application call is in the podcast episode and description. It takes 10 seconds of courage. Go knock it out of the park, man. In perfect alignment with the Mantra Offer movement. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful kingly day.